2 years ago, discussions began in and around the city of Eau Claire about building a performing arts center along with a student dormitory and mixed-use retail space. Along the way, the discussion has morphed and developed into what we now know as the Confluence Project, a more than $80 million plan to build a three-theater performing arts center and a student housing retail complex on the banks of where the Chippewa and Eau Claire rivers meet. But the discussions and the plan have not been without controversy. There have been accusations of fuzzy math and misleading projections, and just as the city and county were about to start pledging money for the Confluence, a citizens group collected around 4,000 signatures to put the issue and some of the funding to the voters in a referendum. Tomorrow, voters in the city of Eau Claire and Eau Claire County will be faced with two questions for the county. The question is, should they contribute $3.5 million to the Confluence? For the city, the question is, should voters decide by referendum any city building project related to the arts worth more than $1 million? This hour, we'll talk about those questions, the project itself, and bring you into the discussion during the Westside's Confluence Referendum Radio Forum. I'm Rich Kramer, and I'm joined by four people in the studio with me, two involved in pushing for the referendum, and two who have been supporting the project from pretty much the start. First, I'd like to welcome members of the group Voters with Facts, which supports the referendum. I'm joined in studio by Mary Jo Cohen, CEO of National Presto, but who comes to us today as a private citizen. Thank you very much for being with us, Mary Jo.
Thank you for having us, Rich.
Good morning. And also with Voters with Facts, I'm pleased to welcome Bob Von Hayden. He's a city council member and also a member of the group. Bob, thank you for being here as well.
Well, thank you for inviting us, and we look forward for an interesting discussion.
It'll be interesting, and hopefully we get a lot of callers on the lines, too. Now, representing the pro-Confluence side of the discussion, I'd like to welcome Ben Richgruber. Ben is the executive director of the Eau Claire Regional Arts Council. Thanks for joining us this morning, Ben.
You bet. Great to be here.
Great to have you. And also joining us today is City Council member Eric Larson, who's also been a staunch supporter of the Confluence Project. Eric Larson, thank you so much.
Thanks for having us all.
And listeners, we want you to call in. Since this project may directly affect the lives of those in and around Eau Claire County, we want to hear what you think. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-228-5615, and we're going to try to take as many calls as possible as time allows. The number again, 800-228-5615. If you can't get through, you can post your question on the Westside's Facebook page. So very quickly, I just want to kind of get the ball rolling. There's been, you know, numbers. A lot of people, their eyes kind of glaze over when there's a lot of numbers involved. And I'll start with Voters with Facts, whoever wants to field it. But when people consider costs of the Confluence Project when they go to the vote tomorrow or the voting booths, should things like the $7 million parking ramp project and the $2 million public plaza improvement and the $5.9 million for a student housing mixed-use building be included? Why or why not? Voters with Facts.
Well, you know, what we have here is a total project. You know, you can't build one without the other. The Fine Arts Center and the student housing, because in the Fine Arts Center, there are some items that relate to a living learning center that's being proposed. And so the housing unit that's being proposed is definitely part of it. So if they are asking $5.9 million for a $26 million building, and we don't know what the final number is, that's still in negotiation, but definitely those costs must be considered. We don't know for sure what the finals are. The plaza, well, I can't believe that they wouldn't want that area improved. Now, what actually it'll turn out to be, nobody really knows at this point in time. It could be just a parking area with a turnaround, or it could be as what came out of the placemaking thing. And then the parking ramp itself. There's no question that the parking ramp is linked to another project on North Barstow. But at the same time, one of the things that is being done right now is a comprehensive parking study. And the result of that parking study is going to say, we need more parking places close to the theater, and how they're going to resolve that. So whether those costs are part of it, yes, they're part of the cost of the overall TIF 8 district, which is part of the Confluence Project, because the Confluence Project is in TIF 8.
All right. Eric Larson or Ben, any response?
Well, you know, I think that's one of the facts that's been put out here that's really not correct. The parking ramp has nothing to do with the Confluence Center. It's a completely separate issue that that the council has looked at briefly and was able to earmark money in the capital improvement budget for that project, which Bob Von Hayden voted for. So that project is tied with the North Barstow Street part of the TIF. It's not connected with the Confluence project in any way. Will some people park in there? I suppose they will. But the project has nothing to do with the parking ramp, and the parking ramp is not connected with the project at all.
Just simply, I don't want to get into a real debate on this with Mr. Larson, but when we talked about the Confluence project and we talked about the parking ramp, it definitely was stated in our discussions that this would be available for the parking, for the theater, specifically if the Confluence project went forward. And those were part of our discussions. Now, as far as earmarking money, we don't have a nickel for that project yet. Any money that we have for the parking ramp, we will have to go out and borrow in the future.
As far as actual documentation, if you look at the documentation for the latest amendment to TIF 8, it does not refer to the North Barstow area in connection with that parking ramp. It is specifically refers to downtown. And that is actually in the document, so you can look on it at the web under, if you look at City Council, TIF 8, look at the amendment, you will find that statement that it applies to downtown, not to the northern
park. Documentation for the parking needs are related to the development agreements with RCU and JAMF. Every parking area downtown is potentially used by the Confluence project. There's nothing special about the parking ramp on the north side of the river that connects it with the Confluence project any more than the other parking ramp does, which is underused, by the way.
All right. We could probably talk about that issue for much longer, but we've got a lot of callers on the line. And one more question. It was recent news came out late last week that private contributions totaling around $425,000 have been pledged for the project, for the Confluence project. I'm curious, Ben Richgruber, does this change the game at all? Does it change the discussion?
No, I think it it keeps showing the positive momentum that we have. This is a very exciting project for the community, and people have jumped on board from the very beginning. When the project was announced, RCU made their pledge of $1 million, and that's just continued. That's one of the parts of this project that has continued from the beginning. We've faced setbacks and hurdles with a lot of things with this project, as you would with any complex project. But the one thing that's been solid for us is the philanthropy. So we're over $5 million pledged now towards our $12 million goal. So we feel very good about that, especially considering the fact that we've got an election tomorrow and there's still some things up in the air.
Mary Jo, I'm curious what your thoughts are on the $425,000. And I think there have been reports of something around $5 million in total contributions, private contributions to this project.
I am concerned in the sense that these are pledges at this point in time. That, as far as I know, there is no foundation that's actually taken these funds. Several of them are multi-year commitments, which I believe we need. We'll need those funds immediately rather than in the future.
All right. Well, let's Bob, go ahead.
I just want to make sure we clarify one thing. It's not $11 million project for contributions. It's approximately $16 million that will be needed to be raised. So let's talk about the real number that's out there, and there is an endowment amount of $2.5 million that's part of that. And as I was told by the fundraiser from the university, that those monies will be difficult to raise because endowment funds are hard to get people to contribute to. But let's hope if the project goes forward, we get the philanthropy that we need.
Eric Larson.
Thanks. The amount of money that's needed to build the project from philanthropy is $13.5 million. Another $2.5 million is for the endowment that acts as a firewall to protect taxpayers. So, yeah, it's in total, if they want to get the $5 million from the city, they're going to have to raise that endowment. So in total, we're talking $16 million in endowment. We're already a third of the way there, and we haven't even gotten past the referendum. So, you know, if the developers and the people behind this project were as concerned about not being able to raise that money as is being portrayed, they wouldn't go through all this trouble to build the project. We're confident that that money can be raised.
All right, with that, let's get to the phones straight away. We've got full phone lines, but We'll clear them out as quick as we can as they get answered. Going to Dave in Eau Claire. Dave, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks, Rich, for taking my call. I just want to make a point to the audience and then get some feedback from both sides on this issue. Now, there's been a lot of debate on should we have local referendums on items like the confluence. And I want to point out to your listeners that by state law, any improvement made at a school that exceeds $1 million, any capital improvement that's bonded, must go to local taxpayers for a vote. And we have some of the best schools in the state here in Eau Claire. That type of system has served our school districts well. And our state has some of the best school districts in the country. So obviously that state law has served us well. And so I think if we can walk through the schools and decide if we need to improve them or not. We can go downtown and see whether we think the confluence is the right project or not. We can go to meetings. We can listen to radio talk shows like this. I think that the local citizens can make a decision really well. You know, I agree with those on the pro-confluence side that at a state level or national level, we have a system that doesn't involve a direct vote. And I'm in agreement with them there, but not on a local basis. On a local basis, we can definitely decide and be smart enough, get intelligent enough, and make that decision. If we can do it for our school, surely we can do it for something like this that's a want and not a need. And I'd really like to get some feedback from both sides on that issue.
Sure. Thanks a lot, Dave. And I'm not sure if that is, but I believe that might be Dave Wood of Voters with Facts. But Eric, it's a question nonetheless. What's your response? Yeah, schools do it.
I'm sure that was my friend Dave. We've known each other for a while. The difference between what's going – well, let's look at it this way. There's two referendums. One is on the county, which is a straight up or down vote, should the county put $3.5 million into the project. That's mm-hmm. the kind of referendum that Mr. Wood is talking about with the schools as well. Should we invest money in a new school or rebuilding schools or whatever or not? What the city is doing is actually a direct legislation. What it does is create a new law. This is a law that was written by a small handful of people, and then it becomes campaign fodder for several months until the actual referendum happens. It's a law that's not based on thoughtful policymaking. It's rather a law that's directed at a specific issue that people are opposed to. And so let's make a new law that requires referendums in the future for anything, any arts-related project that costs $1 million or more. It's a bad way to set law. It's a bad law in the first place, in my view, but it's not representative democracy. And the school district comparison just doesn't wash.
All right. Mary Jo, what?
I would say that it's definitely representative democracy at the purest level. As far as the law, it's comparable to the state law, which isn't just on a specific referendum, but it requires that any school project that is bonded that exceeds $1 million does require a vote of the citizens. This is the same thing here. So it should be very much in Mr. Larson's interest and in everyone else's. As far as the way it was drafted, it was pretty much forced on us by the city council, which would not allow a straight up or down referendum like the county. So I think it's a good thing. And as far as the number of people, this is not a small group of people. It was almost 5,000 people who in a less than a month period of time, in probably the nastiest weather you can imagine, going door to door and getting folks who agreed with it.
And I'm just wondering, you know, I'm going to throw the slippery slope, you know, devil's advocate argument out there. I mean, should everything be decided by referendum? Any spending over $1 million that the city undertakes, whether it's for public infrastructure projects or what have you?
Well, if you're asking my opinion, I would say yes. There are very few $1 million projects. Typically, they are out 5 years before there's any actual decision. They are on a planning basis. There's plenty of time to get a decision by the people. And so, yes, I do think it's a very good idea.
Two more examples of getting the facts wrong. First of all, the council did not refuse to have a straight up or down vote. There was a question posed to one of the organizers of the petition drive, Mr. Bollinger. Would you still pursue a binding referendum, direct legislation, if the council passed an advisory referendum or put an advisory referendum on the ballot? His answer was yes. So there's no reason for us to have two referendums now on the ballot. We've already got two. That would have ended us with three of them, and two of them would have been from the city, an advisory referendum and this binding direct legislation that's now here. The other I forget what your other point was, Mary Jo. I'm sorry.
It may come to you, Bob Von Hayden.
Yeah, just as a comment, it was very simple. What we asked for and what Mike Bollinger asked for was a binding referendum from the council. The council opted with an advisory referendum. And his knowing the nature of the current council we had and of their opinion on the Confluence Project, pro or con, it doesn't make any difference, but there was a predominantly pro philosophy on the council, and so if an advisory referendum went out, they were well aware of that. Probably it would have little or no bearing. So the question was, if you would put on a binding referendum, then we could see something happen. But the council said no to that.
The other incorrect fact that, if you want to call it a fact, that Mary Jo said was that there are very few million-dollar projects with the city. That's just not true.
All right. Well, with that, we got to move on. We've got another caller on the line, Steve in Eau Claire. Steve, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning, and thanks for putting us on the air. I have three questions, and the first one I wouldn't really direct to Mr. Larson. He's only been on the council a very short time, and I'm sure he's probably not familiar with this. But at any rate, we went this pledge route with the university not too long ago. We renovated the Hobbs Ice Arena, and the university pledged to raise $2 million to help in the renovation. Well, what happened was they raised $700,000, and the other $1,300,000 was put on the back of the taxpayer because they didn't come through on their pledges. And my other comment is RCU. In their plan that they brought before the city when they were going to build down there, one of the selling points was there would be two buildings. They would build the first one followed by a second one. And that's when the bridge came up. Well, we're going to have so many people, you know, if we do build something over on the other side of the river, we'll need a walk bridge. Well, that failed. So, you know, these visions, they are good and they're well-intended, but to have a vision and go through with it, if the people that have the vision fail, then they should be held accountable, not the taxpayer. You know, I think a lot of people don't mind the confluence, but they don't want to be the backstop. They don't want to be the co-signer for a developer starting a project that may not go through. Why should we fund it if it doesn't work? That's my comments, and, you know, maybe could answer those.
All right. Thanks a lot, Steve in Eau Claire. A reminder to listeners, we're talking about the Confluence project and the referendum that's coming up tomorrow. If you'd like to call in with questions or comments for either the members of Voters with Facts, the pro-referendum group, or the supporters of the project in studio with us, Eric Larson on the City Council and Ben Richgruber of the Eau Claire Regional Arts Council, the number is 1-800-228-5615. So the question is, I would kind of sum that up as saying or asking whether there are any kind of guarantees on the pledges and what happens if they fall through. Bob Von Hayden.
Right. And I think this is a point that Mary Jo made earlier when she said these are pledges and they're over a period of time. When we went through with the Hobbs Ice Center, yes, there was a lot of out there talking that we were going to get a lot of contributions coming in on this. And the city made a commitment and went forward. And as a result of that, they came short on their fund drive. We didn't get the money, and the city was hung out to paying the debt. And the main thing that I think the point that's made here that's very important is that we make sure that whatever the contributions they say are available, and that they are locked in and we have the dollars. I've been involved with many fund drives over my years working in the healthcare field. And in all of these, there's always a major setback. In other words, if you commit $16 million or pledged, you'll put a reserve fund of a couple million against that because as the pledges go out further, they don't materialize. And I think on a project like this, where the city is the backstop and the guarantor of the whole thing, we have to make sure that whatever dollars are committed to the project in pledges, they are locked in and guaranteed.
All right. Eric Larson, what are your thoughts? Basic question again. Are there any guarantees on the pledge? The pledge, you know, the pledges from the state, from the city, from developers, you name it. And what if they fall short?
Well, the state money that would be put into this project is scheduled for approval or mm-hmm. not approval in August. So once the state approves the money for the project, then, you know, there's no reason to believe the state is going to pull out. This is their plan mm-hmm. for moving forward in the future. As far as individual pledges, people like RCU and JAMF and individuals in our community, if they say they're going to give the money, then there's no reason to doubt that. But the other incorrect fact I heard here is that the city is somehow the guarantor for everything in this project. That's just not true. Let's take an example of, and this is obviously an extreme example. It's not going to happen. But suppose we open the Art Center and nothing happens. We don't have any shows. The first partner in the project who pays for the operation of that building is the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. They will pay a prorated share of the operating costs of that center, whether there's shows there or not. Secondly, we have rental income from ECRAC and Visit Eau Claire. Then we have a $200,000 room tax subsidy. And then there's private philanthropy. Now, who knows how much that is going to be? But if you put the numbers that we know are built into this project already, we're talking about roughly $350,000 to half a million dollars from the university, $116,000 from ECRAC and Visit Eau Claire, $200,000 from room tax, and then we will have set up a $2.5 million endowment that covers anything else. Supposing we had zero shows. So with that $2.5 million endowment, if we had no activity in the Performing Arts Center, it would take at least 8 years to run through that. And no one believes that that's going to happen. We're going to have shows. We have shows already that'll be transferred over there. So that's just not a reasonable assumption. And it's not accurate to say that the city is the guarantor for this project.
If I may respond to that, why are they asking the city to be the backstop then? If any operating
deficits
are—
I can answer
are,
that.
Let me finish.
Yep, okay. Yep.
Anytime, we're guaranteed on that. Now, first of all, an endowment fund. Everybody knows what an endowment fund means. An endowment fund is a fund you set aside and you don't use the principal. You use the interest earnings only. So $50,000 to $70,000 a year doesn't go far, because if you set up an endowment fund and spend the principal, it's gone and you don't have the protection. So if you're going to protect yourself, you make sure you have that. The other thing is he says we got $200,000 in room tax money. Well, right now, to generate that, we need to have an additional 159 or 160 stays in the city of Eau Claire each night. Now, that's not going to happen. Now, maybe Visit Eau Claire will change their policy and not take 56% of it and give some more, but they said no to that already. The other thing is he says we got the rental income from ECRAC, and we have the rental income from Visit Eau Claire. Now, Visit Eau Claire is there. But ECRAC, if we don't have any shows, they don't have any revenue. So how are they going to pay the rent? So let's, you know, all of this will work very well if it's successful and goes forward. But we got to make sure that we have those monies, especially the contributions. Now, if the developers want to go ahead and build the building on the risk that the contributions will come in and they guarantee it, that's a whole different scenario. But I'm kind of doubtful that they would do that.
Eric Larson or Ben Richgruber, we've heard a lot about backstops, and also there's been a lot of discussion about the room tax. Would you care to comment on that?
I can tap on all of those. For starters, I am kind of surprised that you think ECRAC's ticket revenue is all we have. You've seen our budget every year, and it's really only 30% of our revenue. We're a very entrepreneurial organization, and we've got many revenue sources. So just to clear that up, ECRAC does have quite a diverse base of revenue. As far as the backstop, too, I think it's important to note that the university is paying a prorated share, which means they pay for their percentage of use. So if the community doesn't do as much work, then the university is doing a larger percent and will cover a larger percent of operating. So the whole scale tips depending on usage. If the community has 60% use and the university has 40%, which is what we're projecting now, university is going to pay 40%. If community use all of a sudden flips and is 40% and the university is 60%, well, then they'll cover that part of the operating. So it's got a built-in scale that eases it for everybody. And then beyond that, the room tax. I'm also on the board of directors for Visit Eau Claire, so I'm pretty fluent in room tax, as well as being a former hotel manager and owner. Room tax in the city of Eau Claire has grown about 3% every year. That's what the city budgets for the increase in room tax. The city's portion of the room tax, after Visit Eau Claire's portion, with that 3% increase per year, will be almost $150,000 in new revenue just based on current activity in the next 3 years. So we assume the Art Center is going to open in 3 to 4 years. Just the basic growth will cover the increase required in the room tax request for the Confluence project. In addition, the new hotel projects downtown as well as around the city will generate higher room rates. An increased rate obviously means increased room tax and increased sales tax. So there are many pieces to the puzzle. It's not just a brand new number of rooms. It's also the rate that you can get for those rooms. And Eau Claire has shown a very strong demand in room rate. Rate has increased as well, and that's where a lot of the room tax revenues have come from. So it's not as simple as saying, well, we need an extra couple hundred rooms, because there are two sides to that equation.
Well, simply on that, first of all, the 3% increase that was used in the projections, when they gave us the room tax projections, we had put in a price, a rate increase of 2% in the room tax from 6% to 8%, and they used that percentage when they did their projections. And if you look at the normalized numbers, we're looking at about $20,000 a year increase in room tax money for the city, and not the $50,000. There would be some there, but it would be nominal.
Eric Larson.
Let me respond to that. The room tax rate increase occurred in 2009. That was so we've got 5 years of that 8% rate. Over the last 4 years, and the rate hasn't changed in those 4 years, over the last 4 years, the city's share of room tax has gone up $162,000. So the Art Center is projected to be built in about 4 years. In addition to what we've already experienced in our increase in room tax, we just, Visit Eau Claire Board just entered into an agreement with the university to share space for athletic events, bring athletic events to Eau Claire. In fact, we're already realizing a benefit from that. Next year, we'll have the National Table Tennis Championships here in Eau Claire because of that agreement that we've signed with the university. So it's reasonable for us to expect that our room rates or our room stays will increase. As Mr. Richgruber said, our room rates have increased and our tax is at 8% right now. So there's no reason to believe we can't get that $200,000 just in the city share. That doesn't include Visit Eau Claire. That's just the city share in 4 years when the Art Center opens up.
And with that, let's take our first break. We've got two callers on the line still, and we have more room to take your calls. The number is 1-800-228-5615. After a short break, we'll wrap up our discussion about the Confluence Project and tomorrow's referendum. This is the Westside Confluence Referendum Radio Forum on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're speaking with members of the group Voters with Facts, along with two Confluence Project stalwarts this hour. If you missed part of the program or would like to listen again to this broadcast, you can check it out online later today. Go to WPR.org, click on shows, and then again on the West Side link. We'll be back with more of the Confluence referendum discussion in just a bit. I'm Rich Kramer, and this is the West Side Confluence Referendum Radio Forum on Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like more information about the Confluence Project, find links to websites on both sides of the issue, along with some interviews and show segments, check out WPR.org/Confluence. I'm joined now in studio by Confluence supporters Ben Richgruber of the Eau Claire Regional Arts Council and Eau Claire City Council member Eric Larson, along with Mary Jo Cohen and City Council member Bob Von Hayden, both of Voters with Facts. Again, listeners, give us a call at 800-228-5615. We've got one caller that's been sitting on the line for a while. We appreciate that. Penny Lynn, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's your question?
Thanks for shirt and letting me come on, guys. Well, we know that the higher ticket prices are already keeping more children in the families, grandparents, from attending shows right now, and this community cannot afford, you know, $84, $550 tickets like they are in Appleton. And also, my concern is over the fine arts students. Our daughter is a theater major, and I know that this is going to segregate those children from the main campus. It's a distance of walking and or circulating buses, mm-hmm. and those of us that are green and into sustainability don't like that, circulating buses all over the place. And the biggest thing is they'll be wasting precious practice time, so are we going to have a mediocre orchestra at this university, or, you know, I don't know. And then this looks to me like it's just another building for the city to own, and I want to know why the promoters talk about $5 million when you know blame well it's going to be more than that with all the associated projects down there that the city taxpayer is going to be on the hook.
Gotcha, Penny. Thank you so much for the Penny Lind for the question. Ben Richguber, first off, is this going to hurt? Is this going to drive people away? More basically, I guess, our ticket price is going to increase.
We did the math on this about a year ago, and a press release went out and was pretty widely covered by most of the media in town. And we took what the local theater organizations were paying for rent at the State Theater and put those same dates into the Confluence Project. What would they have to pay if they were in the new building? And on average, a ticket increase of only $1.50 would cover the new rental rates in the new facility, $1.50 per ticket. We also have done some research proactively to work with the arts groups, and we've got a few different seating charts and pricing options, which can actually increase your average ticket price for the organization while still allowing even cheaper tickets to be offered. So there's been a lot of work done on that in the arts community to make sure that that happens. So a $1.50 increase in the new facility, I think, is something that most people can absorb. That doesn't really stretch anybody's budget by too much. And I think that there's some great opportunity in the new facility, not only for that, but there were some groups that actually showed savings and could lower ticket prices in the new facility because they have flexibility in venues and flexibility in the technical things that will be in the theater that they won't have to rent and bring in as they do right now. In addition, the benefits for the organizations are just so numerous. The Eau Claire Children's Theater did Legally Blonde last summer, and they actually had to store set pieces in the alley that weekend, and it rained, so then they had to bring in extra tents and tarps to cover that up. That's not what those people deserve. They deserve a stage that can suit their needs. The Chippewa Valley Symphony and the Jazz Orchestra have had to perform off-site because the State Theater can't accommodate the staging that they need. The symphony's done some incredible concerts with the master singers and other vocal partners. Those have had to happen over at Gantner because the stage over there is bigger, but they actually end up losing money because the house is smaller. So they'll sell out the 600 seats at Gantner, and they still have demand. They actually ended up selling tickets to one of their dress rehearsals because there were so many people that wanted to see that concert, but it was sold out. So to have the right size stage and the right size house are very beneficial to the arts organizations. And $1.50 per ticket, I think they'll all agree, most of them will agree, that it's a heck of a deal.
And Mary Jo Cohen, the your thoughts, first of all, on what will happen to ticket prices. Your group has had concerns about that and what it'll do to local theater, but also the traveling shows. On the website, Voters with Facts says that there's some duplication that would be going on if this project was built. Is it really apples to apples, or is it apples to oranges when you consider the State Theater was built, the stage is not as large as some would like?
There's several questions here. First of all, there is no operating plan at this point in time and no actual plan that's been provided. We do know that the VenueWorks report, which I believe Ben is referring to, is not legal under the state, under the Department of Administration, under the state law requirement.
How is that? Why?
Because the state requires that the university owns specific portions of the building. So you have what amounts to 72% of, at least in terms of space, on purely university things like classrooms, prop rooms, costume rooms. These are not going to be available to the community. The lesser amount, we don't know where that's going to go. It could very well go in the 450-seat theater, which is the reason for the $1.50 average. The assumption is that's available to the community. If you look at the 1,200-seat theater, which is comparable to the State Theater in terms of seating, you're looking at a significant increase, and I believe Mr. Von Hayden provided some numbers, and it was a 60% increase for the Children's Theater. Average $1.50. $1.50, but significant, probably about $5 for the children's theater. $1.50 in itself is a killer for someone with a large family in terms of increased tickets. The increase from $6 to $8 has been a problem. And according to the children's theater, additional amounts would break the camel's back. In terms of your other question, which I'm afraid I've forgotten.
Well, the whole apples the size of the stage. You can't accommodate the same shows that other theaters.
Okay, it's not the stage that's the problem. The major problem is the backstage area. There is a building that would provide right stage area. And they are concerned. And this is the Hope Gospel Mission building. They are concerned about what will happen to them because they're very afraid the State Theater will be demolished, and that would have an impact on them. They are willing to work with the State Theater. No one's ever asked them in terms of providing an easement into their building, which would allow that kind of set space. These are all things that can be determined through a feasibility study, which we at Voters with Facts very much recommend.
Ben Richgruber, would that be possible, easement into the neighboring building to create some side stage area for set pieces and what have you?
That solves part of the problem, but not all of the problem. The renovations for the State Theater are already at $6 million. If you add that facility to the side, it's very easily going to approach the same number for dollars that we'd have to raise for the Confluence. And it makes much more sense to collaborate and work together on this. That's the whole point of this project. That's what makes it so wonderful, is the collaboration. On the capital side, both the university and the community are able to get something so much greater than either of us could alone. And it doesn't duplicate. It is apples to oranges. CARE Theater is going away, so there needs to be another 450-seat theater. And the State Theater will not work for modern productions. So this gives us a great opportunity to replace both of those facilities and allow us to move forward as an arts community to grow. With that, too, I wanted to talk about the future of the State Theater, because there's absolutely no reason that because Confluence happens, the State Theater has to be demolished. Those are some scare tactics that we at the State Theater don't really appreciate. The business of the arts has changed, and that building that we're in no longer suits the business that we run. There are many productions that we even used to get at the State Theater that we can't bring in anymore because they just don't fit. The other theaters that they tour are more modern and have grown, so their tours have to adapt to that. So even folks like the Minnesota Ballet, who used to be here very regularly, can't perform some of their shows on our theater anymore, on our stage, because their tour has changed. It has grown. So for the arts in this community to continue to grow and thrive, we need the Confluence. That will give us the flexibility and the opportunity to do that, and at a shared operating cost, which I'll touch on in a moment, too. But by getting the arts groups out of the State Theater, that opens it up for other developers to go ahead and make something wonderful out of that space again. That can still be a community gathering space, another mixed-use building to add to the inventory of our downtown and make it a great place to be. So a thriving downtown, which could be created by Confluence, can only help the future of the State Theater as a building. So if you want to restore that building, the best option is to get the current arts businesses out of that. Second, I want to touch for a moment on the ownership model that Ms. Cohen was talking about. Yes, the original plan for the building was to have the university own a small portion, the community own a small portion, and then for the bulk of it to be a condo. And the state didn't want to go that route, and that's fine. But the ownership model, even if it's owned 50-50, doesn't really change the operating. The budget still works. There are use agreements, so all theaters, all galleries, all workshop spaces are still able to be used by everyone. That's still the plan moving forward. That's still the idea and the philosophy that makes this building work. So the ownership model changing doesn't really change the operating model. We can still see the benefits, and we can still see the savings of working together.
All right. Mary Jo, you had a...
Well, actually, several things. I think we have to look at what shows are we not bringing and what is the value of those shows. Does that justify a $50 million expenditure and the future operational losses? The state is on record that it will not support any operational losses. In terms of operational costs, the state is primarily classrooms, prop rooms, and costume rooms in terms of square footage. So there isn't going to be that much operational opportunity. In terms of the lower cost seats, that was largely assumed that they would be in that 450-seat theater. If that's owned by the university, then effectively the cost, the revenue is going to the university, and the city is going to be stuck, for want of a better word, with the high cost facilities, which will be the 1,200-seat theater, for which there is very little opportunity other than outside shows. Outside shows lose money. and the few community events that are there. And the result is higher costs. So we really think that a cost-benefit study needs to be done in terms of what are the benefits of this new facility versus what are the costs, and then a decision by the community.
I want to take another call because I think they're talking about the same thing about these out-of-town shows, these traveling shows. Kate in Eau Claire, you're on the air, and what's on your mind?
Thank you. One of the things I was wondering we could talk about a little bit, and you may have covered it, I joined the program late, is the long-term economic impact of downtown. For example, my husband and I go to the cities 6 or 7 times a year to see a show in the cities that, for all intents and purposes, we couldn't get at the state just simply because of the size of the theater. And the money that we spend on hotels, on restaurants, on all of those things, I'm wondering how voters with facts want to grow the downtown and affect the bottom line and the economic impact of downtown with when a project like this seems to make sense and does that with lots of input from the state, the county, the city, the university, for example.
All right. Thanks so much, Kate. Voters with facts. Bob.
Well, just simply on that, you know, those questions are wonderful questions, and we hope that if this would go forward, that would happen. However, the shows they're going to in the Twin Cities right now are in the larger theaters. They're shows that run for 8 days, 3 weeks, 2 weeks. You're talking a whole different type of show that they're going to. Now, some of those shows, maybe one or two of those we could bring in here. But one of the things that, you know, it's very interesting, and this is where we, as the voters with facts, want to get more details, because nobody knows. When I took a tour of the State Theater with Ben, and we looked at, if I may call you Ben. When we took that tour, he basically said the stage would be relatively the same size. The wings and the supporting areas would be much greater. So, you know, I'm not saying that just because we make the wings greater, we may not be able to get in a lot of others. But when we talk about the orchestras and the other groups, if we don't increase the size of the stage, how can we bring in these larger groups to fit, you know, into a same space? You know, so this is what we're saying on the Voters with Facts. We need this information out there so the citizens can make an informed decision. And that's all we're saying is that we need all of this information, and we're not getting it.
Ben Richgruber, I'd like to go to you since you're in the biz. These shows, these larger shows, first of all, what kind of things are we talking about, and are they do they lose money?
The biz, baby. Love it when you call
biz,
it that.
The biz, yeah.
Have my people call your people. No, and I mean, that's another reason that this referendum is dangerous, and especially the city one that singles out the arts groups. We run a very unique business. It is a business, and we are in it. We've got to survive. We've got to pay the bills. It's tough. It's tough, but we make it work. As far as the types of shows that we could bring in, there are many different tours of the same show. If you do a Broadway production, an example, my wonderful college friend, Jim, worked on the third level tour, the C tour of Mamma Mia. So he toured the country and he hit cities like Eau Claire would be able to bring in because it's a smaller tour. It's the same show, same choreography. A lot of the same actors will bounce around the different productions, but they have different sizes of tours. So are we going to get the same 10 semi show that stops in Minneapolis for, you know, 6-8 weeks at a time? No, but we're going to get the same production in a 3 semi or 4 tour that will stop in Eau Claire for 1 week. They did 1 week stops up to 4 week stops, depending on where they went. So by having the stage and the support space available, we'd be able to bring in some of these Broadway names that we just can't accommodate now because they do have multiple level tours, primary city, secondary city, and tertiary city tours. So we'd be able to bring in that third level tour of many shows, especially shows that our local groups won't be able to do for another few years because they are still so popular and making money on tour. And those productions most certainly do not lose money or they wouldn't be coming to town. That's for sure. They're a business. They got to pay their actors and their drivers just like anyone else. So that's just a false assumption that they lose money, too.
This is the West Side's Confluence Referendum Radio Forum on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rich Kramer in studio with supporters of the project and members of Voters with Facts, a group which supports tomorrow's city and county referendum. The number to call in, 800-228-5615. We'll take a brief break, just about 40 seconds. We'll be back and wrap up the discussion. This is the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're having the Confluence Referendum Radio Forum here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Voters with Facts is a group that supports the referendum. They're comprised of City Council member Bob Von Hayden and Mary Jo Cohen, as well as many other individuals. And also in studio with us are project supporters Ben Richgruber, he's the executive director of the Eau Claire Regional Arts Council, and Eric Larson, who is a city council member in support of the project. We're talking about the project, the referendum, and taking your calls until the top of the hour. We've got some time. We'll try to work in a couple more. The number is 1-800-228-5615. You can also leave a comment on our Westside Facebook page, and the groups will be able to answer it as they please after the fact. So right now we're going to go to James in Eau Claire. James, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for putting this on today. Briefly wanted to mention that, you know, Kate had talked about going over the cities. That one of the many concerns I've heard from folks is that, you know, it's going from an 1,100 seat theater to a 1,200 seat theater. It passes a much, much nicer 1,200 seat theater. But if you have a show that requires 2,000 tickets to be sold, you know, per evening, it still can't come to a 1,200 seat theater. And so a lot of people, it seems, just are concerned about the type of facility, the size of facility that's being planned. But Ben mentions the business of the arts, and I think that that's a good term that he used. He said, you know, we're in the business of the arts. So given that it's a business, kind of a somewhat rhetorical question I would ask is, how about we ask the developers to own the Performing Arts Center, and we the people will own the multi-use building and the housing complex? And then let's see whether or not they still want to go forward with it.
All right, good.
And I think that, you know, that this is when Mary Jo talks about theaters being money losers, she's talking about the theater owners. I'm sure the acts will make their money. The question is, will the theater itself pay for itself?
All right. Thanks a lot, James, for the call. Ben, any thoughts on James's comments?
As far as the developers owning the building, they are private developers, and they can do what they want to do. What they do know is that downtown is stronger and much more vibrant when you have an anchor like an arts center. This has been proven time after time in community after community, that arts centers bring people to town. They generate activity, physical activity and economic activity, and that has always proved beneficial to these communities. And while the Arts Center may need to be subsidized in some of those, and there are plenty of examples where it does, plenty that it doesn't, the cities see that that is a wise investment because it generates much more in economic activity, in room tax, in sales tax, across the board than it generally does on its own. And even, you know, Mr. Von Hayden, Bob, has been quoted in the Leader Telegram when we were talking about budget season for Hobbs. They needed an increased subsidy this year. And you said that it's perfectly acceptable for those groups to have a subsidy because of what they provide for the community and the users of that facility. And I imagine that that would continue to hold true for your support of the arts at the city council level because the arts are very similar to those other recreational opportunities. So I think that cities see that it is very beneficial to have an anchor like this. And as in regard to the business of the arts, you bet, it's tough running a facility like that. And that's why this opportunity to work with the university makes it so much better. To have a willing partner that can cover a percentage of the operating expenses really makes it very sustainable. In fact, the community can be a partner in the Confluence for the same cost that we're currently using for the State Theater, and we get much more than triple the opportunity.
All right, Bob Von Hayden, we are getting very close to the top of the hour, so if you could please be concise, and then we'll wrap it up.
In very simple terms, we have a phenomenal arts group in the city of Eau Claire. It already is in downtown Eau Claire. The State Theater has been renowned in its use and things, and Visit Eau Claire uses it as one of their lead things of bringing people to Eau Claire to go to shows. 41% of the people come from outside of Eau Claire. So to say that we don't have that already, this is where our concern is we're saying everybody's talking about what this arts thing is going to do to the future and all of this phenomenal growth, it's already here. And so we would have a small increment, but not the significant increment that they're talking about.
Ben, very quickly, please.
Just a quick follow that up. Care Theater is going away, and the State Theater is crumbling. So to say that we'd be duplicating is just not true, because we're about to lose some very important things for this community that we do take pride in. And the Confluence is a great way to keep the arts alive here in Eau Claire.
We've got about a minute left. Voters have two very important questions that they'll be asked among the other important decisions to make on the ballot. Ben Richgruber, what would you tell them?
Well, I'd say that a yes on the county vote is a very strong sign. It shows that you're supportive of the arts, you're supportive of growth in downtown and in our county, and that would be a fantastic opportunity for growth and for progress for new and exciting things in Eau Claire. As for the city referendum, I think it's very dangerous. Not only does it change the way that we govern, but it singles out the arts in a very unfair fashion. And even if Confluence doesn't move forward, it means referendum after referendum, whether you like the State Theater, whether you like any other arts place. It's a dangerous road to go down, and it's very destructive for the arts community in this town.
All right, Bob Von Hayden, I know Voters with Facts isn't officially against the project, but what would you tell voters as they go tomorrow?
My recommendation to the voters is if you don't want to pay additional property taxes on the county, vote no. There will be a property tax increase. We finally got them all to admit it. As far as the referendum on the city, they're all using scare tactics to say there'll be out of referendums in the future. All we want is get the facts out. So people get out and vote. Vote no county, vote yes city.
All right, thank you all for the discussion. That's our time. I'd like to thank our guests. Eric Larson is an Eau Claire City Council member. Ben Richgruber is the Executive Director of the Eau Claire Regional Arts Council. They are both supporters of the project, the Confluence Project, and members of the Voters with Facts. Mary Jo Cohen and Bob Von Hayden, City Councilor, thank you all so much. I'm Rich Kramer. Tomorrow is the time to get out and vote, exercise your rights, and be informed. Check out WPR.org/confluence for links to both websites and information about the product, project, that is. No matter what your persuasion is, be a citizen and cast a ballot. Tune in next week. We'll discuss rural mental health options and opportunities in western Wisconsin. I'm Rich Kramer. Have a happy and productive week, and we'll chat again next Monday morning.